Nobody gets into maintenance for the paperwork. But somewhere along the way, the clipboards piled up and the spreadsheets multiplied. Good technicians spend hours per day on admin instead of turning a wrench. MaintainX was built to give that time back. Preventative maintenance runs on a real schedule. Automated, assigned, and nothing slipping through. With MaintainX, work orders go out in seconds, and everyone from the floor to the front office knows what's due and when. So your team gets back to the machines, not the paperwork. Over 14,000 companies are already running on MaintainX because the people who keep the world running deserve tools that actually work. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com. That's MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
I'm sorry. I was just a little delayed here. I was helping Ethan put up the pride flag in the studio because that had not been, you know, installed at this point. And it's June 1st, ladies and gentlemen. It's Pride Month, and we're going to celebrate every damn day that we can, because, you know, it's not like there's not other days throughout the years and months that are for Trans Awareness Day and all this stuff. I was, 2 years ago, and I hope this isn't the case. I like our friends over there at the War Memorial, right? But they put the pride flag up outside of the memorial 2 years ago, and I thought it was just outrageous. Now, last year, they did not do it, okay? But I'm certain that the city of St. Louis, who can't pick up your trash, who can't respond to 911 calls, who can't reduce crime, who can't hire more cops, who can travel to London and spend a lot of money, we'll get to that in a second, that they would have had no hesitation in putting up the pride flag first thing this morning to make sure it's there, because there's nothing more important than celebrating pride. You know how I know that? Because Michael Strahan did it this morning. They started with like a gay salsa segment on Good Morning America.
Hey, my name is Mark Fitzpatrick, owner of Old States.
Oh, that's not the one I wanted to play. We'll play Mark here in a second. Here's Strahan.
All right. Well, welcome back to GMA, and that was an amazing performance by Pride Salsa, helping us kick off Pride Month celebrations here at GMA. Shine a light on the beauty of the LGBTQ plus community. And this morning, it's all about the dance floor. Let's take a look.
And then they got the Pride Salsa dancers in the studio.
You can dance. It's a feeling.
Really?
Vimal Pradeep, originally from India, fell in love with that feeling before moving to New York City, eager to create a safe space for people like him to embrace salsa out loud.
Yeah, like this was like the lead story this morning, so it was very, very important. But I found something to counter it just a little bit. You make your choice. I'm going to celebrate Pride Month, but there are alternatives.
Hey, my name is Mark Fitzpatrick, owner of Old State Saloon in Eagle, Idaho. Our saloon has become the heterosexual headquarters. We launched Heterosexual Awesomeness Month for June. Monday is Heterosexual Male Monday. And if you're a heterosexual male and you come in here, you get a beer for free.
Yeah.
There's no strings attached. We'll call it Beers for Breeders. Wednesdays,
like
if you're
that.
A heterosexual couple, you get 15% off your entire bill. And on Thursdays, all day is Her Hetero Happy Hour. So Heterosexual Awesomeness is basically an opportunity to celebrate God's design for man and woman and that sexual attraction between them. I think that this country is ready to stand up and say, hey, enough is enough.
Heterosexual Awareness Month. I mean, we really don't have one. I think we have to take the ownership. And then we need a Heterosexual Awareness Day. And then we need something else related to heterosexuals. We need like 10 things to compete at this point. But happy Pride Month, ladies and gentlemen. And it's just so ridiculous, all the attention.
That bar had a better beat. Yeah. Did you notice that?
Well, I did notice that. Yeah. But, you know, all the sports franchises, I think the Blues went out there already today. They all have to, and the Cardinals, they have to virtue signal on Pride Day, like it's the biggest, because it is. It's the biggest time of the month. We're going to hear about it nonstop. However, I will say this, and some other people have made this observation. I believe corporate America's not quite as invested in the Alphabet Mafia as they used to
be.
And by the way, here's the thing that's funny. I feel like maybe I shouldn't say this. It'll sound like, you know, I have the one black friend, right? But maybe I have two black friends. But no, on the gay thing, I've had gay roommates. I had two gay roommates. My best friend on the planet is partner gay. I just visit him in Vegas. I've had gay mentors since I was 16, 17 years old. So I know that there might be some temptation from a fringe part of the listenership to call me homophobic or whatever that word would be, but that's just ridiculous. And, you know, I say this all the time, and it's true. Most of my gay friends, because they think this stuff is nuts, the Pride Month and the trans awareness and all this stuff, they think it's crazy too. So there's a lot of normal, you know, gay and lesbian Americans, and they didn't play the victim card like this era does, and they didn't have Pride Month and all that crap, and they suffered through a lot of discrimination, like real discrimination. And, you know, if you want to really talk about people that need to be held up, it's the people that made the sacrifices, were afraid to come out, you know, to family and friends and work colleagues, etc. So this generation, I have no time for that whatsoever. All right, we got a lot of stuff going on today. We're going to have Tim Carney drop by from the Washington Examiner, and he is kind of talking about some of the issues that the Republicans have right now. We have Governor Kehoe coming up. You know, we have the August ballot initiatives, including the phase out of the income tax. We have not chatted with the governor for a while. I took a rather interesting field trip with my daughter on Saturday, Sue. She wanted to go shopping, and she dragged me into Sephora and some other places. So I have some stories to relate in the next hour. Phil Holloway was going to join us, but I think we got Paul Morrow. And Paul was at this thing, Fred, what is it called? Like
CrimeCon.
CrimeCon in Las Vegas.
Ooh!
Yeah.
Keith Morrison.
Was he there? He probably had to be.
I bet he was.
Maybe he did a seminar. So Paul was there, and he did, a bunch of the seminars.
He did a panel on the Nancy Guthrie case.
Yeah, on Nancy Guthrie. He led that one.
So
we got that coming up. We'll have Cusimano this afternoon, David Strom from HotAir.com, and then tomorrow's the big primary in California for mayor and for governor. Brian Ping, our friend from KNX Radio, who is a St. Louis native, is going to join us a little earlier. Ethan actually brought this up. I almost missed this before the show, and I'm just kind of curious about your reaction this afternoon. I'm not quite as worked up about this because it's not taxpayer money, but you decide, all right? So this story just broke a short time ago in our local paper. An April trade mission that took St. Louis Mayor Kara Spencer and County Executive Sam Page to London cost more than $247,000, including dinners, wines, private tours of local attractions, and an embassy reception, according to receipts. Now, the taxpayers didn't pay for this. Okay, I think that's first and foremost something really important to mention, right? So they say fees from nearly three dozen participants, not taxpayers, paid for the trip, as well as Spencer and Page's expenses, according to the trade agency that organized the mission. But the Post-Dispatch writer says the free ride for the region's top public officials, however, came amid turbulent times for the city and the county. So basically, they're pointing out in here, because they reference the anniversary of the tornado, that residents say they feel forgotten as the recovery slowly drags on. I think that's certainly true. I don't think it really you needed a trip to London in the UK to highlight that. I think we've known that they felt like some of the stuff is not happening as quickly as it should. So they kind of go in and they describe the what happened here, because they do point out that this is not unusual. You have government officials that travel on trips like this, junkets, if you will. Now, Sam Page, I think, is interesting outside of what Kara does, because we don't know what the hell Sam Page does anyway, right? He doesn't show up to council meetings. He still has the part-time gig. But what people will say is that, okay, this wasn't taxpayer money, but it was still taxpayer time. And Kara and Sam are like, look, we're there to boost St. Louis, to work to secure future revenue and jobs. These are the types of things that people in elected, positions end up doing. So before I give you the receipts and the specifics, any issue with it overall, Sue? Do you think you have a problem with this?
Geez. I mean, I know we didn't pay for it, so okay.
So are you okay with it?
Yeah.
You know, because they're trying to do things to help the region. But listen, this is a good trip, okay? So This was the kickoff for British Airways going direct.
Which I think is cool.
It's awesome. So this is a trade mission. You have 30 people that are going. The total cost for round-trip airfare was $129,000. Private charter buses shuttle participants around London during the trip. The receipts there were $12,000. Again, the taxpayers weren't paying for this, okay? I think you got a completely different scenario if that's the case. On April 20th, it's kind of interesting, though, to hear the numbers, because the numbers add up relatively quickly.
The numbers are awfully higher than mine would have been had I taken this trip.
Well, these are people of means.
That's a good point.
The DoubleTree by Hilton at the Tower of London, participants checked in on April 20th. It was $45,000 or $1,300 per person. That included breakfast, thank God, as well as $150 for three bottles of, what is this, Prosecco?
Prosecco.
What's that?
Isn't it wine and sparkling water?
I think it might be. That was for a welcome toast. And the hotel gave complimentary room upgrades to Spencer Page and Kevin O'Malley, a member of the St. Louis Economic Development Partnership Board of Directors. On that night, participants attended an $8,500 opening dinner at the Private Inn and Out Naval Military Club. This is where Prosecco comes in. $850 worth of Prosecco and French wine, plus $3,500 for finger foods and three-course meals. And then they go on and on, and you know, they kind of list the different things, because they go to the Chelsea Football Club Stadium. They sit down to a nearly $6,600 dinner, drinks and receptions. They're in the exclusive director's lounge at the stadium. They went to a working lunch that was put on by a nonprofit called BioSTL and the Department of Business and Trade in the UK, and that was $3,300. The embassy hosted a $13,000 reception for more than 200 guests. Look, I mean, these costs are probably, unfortunately, kind of in line with what things cost. And you're not going to have, you know, government officials from the city of St. Louis, and you're going to fly them in and say, hey, we're going to go to just the neighborhood pub.
Right. And get some fish and chips.
Some spot. Well, I would say spotted dick, but I mean, that's something that,
some people may prefer.
But I'm not saying I prefer that.
Sure.
But it's an English dessert.
Yes.
Just so you know. It's like a pudding or something.
And,
like
you know, if they're eating that expensive breakfast and it's just kippers, you know?
Yeah.
Ugh.
But the thing here that's very hard to determine is, what's the ROI? So you go on a junket like this, and is there a return on investment? I would hope so, because they're being wined and dined. I think that this British Airways thing is a really, really big opportunity for St. Louis.
Agreed.
And it will, I think, even force Lufthansa to step up their game, because I have not had the best experiences on Lufthansa. I tend to think I have more issue here with Sam Page going on the trip, because, again, I'm pretty convinced, even though I've had some questions more recently about Kara, and we can ask, you know, the governor some of these questions in a little bit too. Sam Page, I never know what the hell he's doing anyway.
Nobody does.
Right? So that's where I would throw the red flag.
Nobody gets into maintenance for the paperwork, but somewhere along the way, the clipboards piled up and the spreadsheets multiplied. Good technicians spend hours per day on admin instead of turning a wrench. MaintainX was built to give that time back. Preventative maintenance runs on a real schedule. Automated, assigned, and nothing slipping through. With MaintainX, work orders go out in seconds, and everyone from the floor to the front office knows what's due and when. So your team gets back to the machines, not the paperwork. Over 14,000 companies are already running on MaintainX, because the people who keep the world running deserve tools that actually work. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com. That's MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, we got Governor Kehoe coming up for a conversation here at the bottom of the hour. First and foremost, I want to ask him about the ballot measure that will appear on the August ballot. Several, actually, ballot measures, but the one to phase out the state income tax is, you know, the key piece of Mike Kehoe's promises, legislation, all of those things. He's trying to keep his promises, but that is a controversial measure, and I'm concerned that it's not going to pass. I support it, but we'll find out. Get some details from Governor Kehoe coming up. Tim Carney is back with us this afternoon. senior political columnist for the Washington Examiner, wrote a piece that caught my attention. Tim, I've been, you know, kind of trying to deal out some tough medicine here for the listeners when it comes to some of the things that the administration is doing. You seem to share some of my concern. It's not only you, it's kind of what the American people are thinking. We're seeing some polling that is very dramatic right now, aren't we?
Yeah, Donald Trump has fallen below 40% in approval ratings. And to put that in context, his first term, shortly after the January 6th riots, when he got impeached by the House and even some Republican senators voted to remove him, he was still had a higher approval rating. And a lot of people thought he had a floor of 42, 43%. There's a lot of people said he has a low ceiling, but a high floor. He wasn't going to drop below 42, 43. But now he has. And that he's not going to run again. But I think it really bodes poorly for Republicans in the midterms.
So what when you dig into the polling, though, what's driving it right now? Is there any, because obviously, you know, we started the year in a very much different situation. We had immigration. There was a lot of controversy there. I do think that some independent voters were concerned about what they saw in Minneapolis. So there was some support that was lost there. We see that some Hispanic support has dropped off as well. Now you have the war, you have the economy, gas prices. I mean, my sense is that a lot of people are like, wait a second here. We thought we were heading in the right direction on inflation and there were no more foreign wars. What's going on, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, what I look at in my Examiner piece is both the right track, wrong track number, where it was a year ago, there were 7% more, 7 percentage points more said wrong track, 51 to 49. That 7-point gap is now a 26-point gap. And so that is, it's basically 2-1, say wrong track to right track, instead of just slight majority said wrong track. Economics seems like the biggest issue right now. So if you look, Trump's approval on two issues are at or below 30%. One, is he handling inflation? And two, was the Iran war a good idea?
Right.
And so those obviously are connected because higher gas prices makes lots of things become more expensive in addition to filling up your tank. And that is downstream from the war of choice that he started in the Middle East. Now, prior presidents had experience with wars in the Middle East that didn't go well. So that's another thing that surprised a lot of sort of independents who voted for Trump is they said, well, you know what? In his first term, he didn't do one of these wars of choice. And now he's doing it. So that what he was sort of you had two jobs. Don't get into dumb wars and fix inflation. And it seems like he's not doing either.
Look, I've said similar things. And, you know, look, a lot of the lawmakers on Capitol Hill have not broken bad on Trump. But I know for a fact, I'm sure you do, too, that behind the scenes, they're extremely concerned. And I'm confused as far as, you know, what the strategy is, especially on Iran. Now, we heard some things today that seem to be positive when it comes to an agreement. I just am in the camp that simply doesn't think you can negotiate with these people. And they're going to try to drag it out as long as possible.
No, I agree. And the fact there is one joke that Trump has negotiated 12 peace agreements with Iran, and that's a lot, which is to say he hasn't successfully nailed anything down. It's hard. None of this stuff is simple. The problem isn't that he's, you know, bad at negotiating or he's being rolled by the Iranians. It was opening the can of worms with the war. And to some extent, that's something that Trump was one of the places where he sort of broke up the old monopoly, the old dogma of the Republican Party was the Republican Party was very pro-war. They supported the Iraq War. They were the hawks in the Cold War. They did the Persian Gulf War. And Trump was like, no, we're going to break from that. And that brought in a lot of independents. And to be clear, Trump is very strong among self-identified Republican voters.
Oh, yeah.
And then among the people who said, I really am a Trump supporter, he hasn't lost that much percent, that much support. But the people who were Trump voters and were independent, those are the ones that have soured on him. And again, I didn't look at the – I've seen the headlines about Hispanic voters dropping off. That seems possible. But to me, it's the people who just – it's pocketbook issues.
Yeah.
Who what they want from the government is don't mess stuff up. And Biden caused the inflation in his term. It wasn't like it's something that happened to him. He caused it. And now Trump is causing the gas prices. Again, the government is creating a problem that affects people's pocketbooks.
They not only, you know, maybe causing the gas prices, but one of my concerns has been that they're minimizing the effect that it's having on people, seemingly, with some of the comments. And they indicate that this is going to come down pretty fast. I don't think we ever have historical evidence of gas prices coming down as quickly or nearly as quickly as they went up. But when it comes to, you know, control of the Senate, Tim, in particular, that's where maybe you know, I'm not going to, you know, give them the House, but historical trends would certainly favor the Democrats mm-hmm. taking over the House. We know that. But the Senate, you know, if you go back a year and a half, was relatively safe. I don't think Graham Plattner is going to win in Maine in the end. But obviously, you have some seats now that might be in play that weren't. And that's, you know, that's going to be problematic if you have both the Senate and the House with control by the Democrats. You get nothing done the next 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, so once the Democrats take the House, which is not guaranteed, but it's likely, then you're not going to pass any legislation. But then the question is appointments. Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, mm-hmm. God bless them, they That's are right. not getting younger. And if the Republicans do not control the Senate, then you have the problem of the Democrats will not let Trump appoint anybody, basically. The Republicans did it to Obama in That's his right. last term, last 2 years. And so that would happen.
And like, thank God, by the way, because we would have ended up with, what's his name, the former attorney general, who had been the worst.
Merrick Garland.
Oh, my God. He was the worst, right?
Maybe. Then he wouldn't have done the damage he did at DOJ. But, yeah.
Well,
no,
yeah.
I'm glad we
there
have
is that.
but so then the can the Democrats really take the Senate? Again, 6 months ago, people would have said no way. The way I look at it, the Democrats basically have to pick up every swing state and at least one or two of the sort of leaning Republican states, which would be, you know, an Iowa or something like that. They'd have to win Maine. Now, Graham Plattner's tanking and Janet Mills is talking about the governor.
Maybe getting back in, right?
That, right?
Yeah, yeah, that'll
so, yeah,
be interesting.
So these things can happen. I've been covering politics for 26 years, covering these elections, and not every year is a wave election. But I remember in 2006, that Democratic wave, there were races where we thought there was no chance, where we stopped looking at it in May, and then we had to look at it again in October, and next thing we know, Democrats took that, and I saw the reverse 4 years later. That Republican wave in 2010 knocked off Democrats who, you know, if you ask the experts, they were safe Democrats as of May, and then come November, they were going to get their lobbying jobs because they got knocked off.
Yeah.
So you could see a tsunami, and it happens in every midterm, almost no matter what. But I do believe that the mistakes on the war and the inability to affect rising prices contribute. I also argue that I think some of the ethical stuff, where his family didn't do the sort of overseas business dealings in the first term, and then in the second term, he said, that's fine. I think a lot of independents are rubbed the wrong way by that as well.
You know, I do too, Tim. And, you know, one of the things that I always kind of try to make clear, there's a lot of people that are listening right now that probably are independent and they maybe swing, you know, different ways, not necessarily partisan, but we're a conservative radio station. So there's a lot of folks that certainly are more loyal to Trump. But one of the things I always try to make them understand is that, you know, in these big elections in particular, not primaries, but in the generals, that those independents do drive a lot of this. You know, we're preaching to the choir on a lot of this stuff, but, you know, outside of the Beltway, these things are having real effects on races. Then you go to the quality of candidates, you know, because that matters as well. So I'm concerned moving forward. And by the way, here's something else. And I would say that this is kind of separate but related. I retweeted this from Matt Walsh today. I think he's also kind of screwed up the America 250 thing. And I don't really understand why they did that.
Yeah, I was one of the people who said, man, it would be horrible if Dems, who are all down on America, like trot out 1619 projects.
Yes, me too, Tim.
We need like real patriots in there. But then some weird combo of sort of Trump making everything political and wanting to maybe focus too much attention on himself, and then maybe some competence issues. It seems like they're really not looking like they're going to pull it off.
I'm confused.
Now,
I'm confused by so much.
It's
sad.
I
made it. So that was one of the things I said during this election. I don't want Kamala Harris or Joe Biden up there because we're celebrating the 250th birthday of our country. I remember 1976 and how big of a deal it was. So I'm, you know, I liked your tough medicine and your calm. That's why I had you on, but I appreciate you. You're writing about that, Tim. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have
All
a
right.
good one.
Take care. Let me just read. This was something I retweeted earlier. Here's Matt Walsh. And I can't disagree with this. He goes, I'm actually pretty pissed at how badly they've bungled America 250. First, they tried to invite Milli Vanilli, which that should have been our first hint, right? I mean, first of all, Vanilli's dead. Or Milli, one of them.
One of them.
Yeah. And the bunch of other absurdly washed up geriatric one-hit wonders. Then that didn't work out. They decided to convert the event into a Trump rally. Well, Trump will talk about himself for 90 minutes. This should have been a massive, raucous celebration of the country and its 250-year history. Now it will be a political rally identical to the 10 million other ones we've already seen. I don't like that, but there's a lot of things that are confusing me these days, but I agree with Matt.
Nobody gets into maintenance for the paperwork, but somewhere along the way, the clipboards piled up and the spreadsheets multiplied. Good technicians spend hours per day on admin instead of turning a wrench. MaintainX was built to give that time back. Preventative maintenance runs on a real schedule. Automated, assigned, and nothing slipping through. With MaintainX, work orders go out in seconds, and everyone from the floor to the front office knows what's due and when. So your team gets back to the machines, not the paperwork. Over 14,000 companies are already running on MaintainX because the people who keep the world running deserve tools that actually work. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com. That's MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one.
So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast.
Reality Gaze, let's love!
We were trying, last week we were trying to get a couple of our really good, crime analysts on. Those would include Phil Holloway and Paul Morrow. And it's interesting, both of them were at this thing called CrimeCon 2026 in Las Vegas. In fact, Paul was leading a panel discussion on the Nancy Guthrie case. So he's going to join us at 4:30. We have, that's right after Sue's News, we have Cusumano coming up. Good weekend for the Cardinals. They took 2 out of 3 from the Cubs. We got the Rangers in town for a couple of games. The NBA Finals are set. The Stanley Cup Finals are set. And the Battlehawks get ready for the playoffs. There's a topic I really haven't followed, even though I'm a big football fan, but we might touch on that as well. Right now, we have Governor Mike Kehoe back on the show to talk about a variety of things, a bunch of stuff coming up with the elections in particular. Governor, how are you? Welcome back. Hope all is well.
It's always great to be on with you, Mark. We're doing good. Thanks for having us.
A lot of questions. Let's start with the income tax plan and the decision, first and foremost, to put that on the August ballot.
Yeah, we said all along we want Missourians to vote on this plan. We think it's the most, probably one of the largest policy pieces that our state has faced, possibly in decades. And again, this puts us in a competitive position with other states who are trying to grow their economy, grow their population, and provide opportunities for their residents. And we think we campaigned on this. We told Missourians we're going to put a plan forward. Whether they agree with that plan, we don't know. We sure hope they do. We think that will be a good thing for them to vote on Amendment 5 in August, and we're hoping they vote yes.
So, look, I want you to understand here, I'm on your side. I'm voting for this thing. I'm trying to make the case for it, Mike. But what I'm hearing from a lot of people, even some folks on our side, is that, you know, it's going to fail and that it was the cart before the horse a little bit with the carve-outs. We don't know exactly what's going to happen. Some people are calling it a power grab. I mean, I got involved in a Facebook exchange. That's always a mistake last week where I'm trying to tell people, look, nobody's really looking at this like you're going to have a lot more money in your paycheck. But they're buying into some of the scare tactics and the talking points. So that concerns me as we move forward, because I personally want it to pass.
You're right. There's a lot of misinformation out there. And we said from our State of the State speech that there will be three categories that we won't touch in when we revitalize and kind of regenerate a new sales tax code, which hasn't been done since 1931. We would not touch agriculture, healthcare, or real estate. Billionaires and that have been largely pocketing money in the e-commerce sector for years in our state need to be accounted for and to level the playing field for our small brick and mortar businesses. So that's the concept behind this, Mark, is let Missourians decide whether they think we should eliminate the state income tax. And if they say yes in August, the reason of moving it to August is gives us more time to look at and work with other interested groups, whether that's family farmers or business groups or individuals, on what a new sales tax code could look like. Look, other states who have this no income tax environment have grown at a pace much, much faster than Missouri has. We're losing population. They're gaining population. You can't continue to do that for too long. This is an option for Missourians to look at to see if this doesn't make sense for our economy and for their families.
Look, I think it's big and bold, and that's one of the reasons, Governor, that I like it so much. You know, and I love what you said there a couple of minutes ago, because I've been trying to tell people this. They keep saying the realtors and all. I'm like, the governor has made that clear that that's not going to happen, but that's not stopping people. And again, what I've heard, this is anecdotal, of course, that older conservatives, you know, those over 60, and let's talk about retirees, because that is one of the claims that, you know, retirees aren't getting necessarily a paycheck, but they have to pay the sales taxes. So what would the response to that be for, you know, seniors that are concerned about this?
Listen, everybody, on top of everybody's mind is property tax and different tax assessments in various counties and communities across the state, by the way. This is the one chance that you have, since counties can't actually gain from a revised sales tax code. They have to stay neutral. This is the one chance where we have different municipalities to now to roll back some of those fixed costs that affect our seniors so broadly. The other thing seniors pay a lot of is on health care, and we've been very clear we will not support anything that has additional taxes on health care. So there's some protections in there for seniors and other Missourians. We want to make sure, again, we have to be in a state that's competitive where our economy can grow and our population grows. It's just like business. If you're not growing, you're dying. And Missouri is not growing right now.
I know. All right. And then there's some other ballot issues, though, that landed in August as well. Weren't there?
Yeah, the Amendment 1 is the Parks and Soils, Water and Sales Tax, very important to our state parks, very important to conservation groups, very important to our agriculture community. We think that breaking them up and getting them into the August ballot is a good position for them to be in, because November is going to have a lot of competitive issues on it, and so this is a good spot for them to be. The IP reform that you and I think care very much about, that
absolutely
would make it raise the bar so that these billionaires from the East and West Coast who want to come in and change Missouri's Constitution overnight, makes it a little bit harder for them to do and really puts it back into the power of the people.
Governor Mike Kehoe is here. What is going on with the St. Louis Police Board in the city right now? Can you explain that situation?
Well, as you know, we are a huge supporter. Again, it's another issue we campaigned on, is returning city police control to local residents that are under state-appointed members. Unfortunately, there's some folks within the city that have not decided to prioritize, in my opinion, public safety in the St. Louis Police Department, that we need to make sure that's prioritized. And our Board of Commissioners has done a great job battling through, not only trying to take care of our men and ladies in blue, which is my number one responsibility, I think, as governor and as I think any elected official should be. We protect those men and ladies who are putting their lives on the line. But we need to make sure that our police department is funded appropriately and that we can start backfilling those empty positions. Over 300, 340 is the latest number I've heard of empty slots on the police department. So, you know, it's about prioritizing. You and I know that. When you have budgets, you have to prioritize. I think the community's budgets should be prioritized around public safety. I'm hoping that we can get to that part of the conversation, really put some meat on the bone on what it takes to improve the safety of the residents in St. Louis City.
I think it's crazy that sometimes the words public safety are left out of some of these things. It's stunning to me. Have you spoken with the mayor about this? Because obviously she's got a different opinion right now.
Listen, I'll tell you that Mayor Spencer has had, you know, some tough environment thrown at her. You know, 32 days in the office, she has a tornado rip right through the major parts of the North St. Louis City, close to where I'm from. She's had her hands full, and so I'm not going to bash the mayor over this. The only thing, yes, and I have talked to her personally.
Okay.
The only thing I've asked the mayor and other city leaders, the Board of Aldermen, et cetera, in the city is budgets are about priorities. They're not easy. Missouri is facing some tough budget times as well, and I know the city has some tough budget times, but I'm hoping that they will prioritize public safety. I think if you do that, a lot of other problems can get cured.
What is your work, perhaps behind the scenes, in front of the scenes right now when it comes to data centers? We've had a lot of opposition, you know, to that in rural areas. St. Charles, it's come up down in Festus, too. There's some urban data centers that I think are moving forward. But look, we need these data centers for AI, but they've become a NIMBY issue to a certain extent. So what is your stand on that right now?
Well, let me just say, President Trump is the one who has said it the best, I think, is that data centers and AI is the space race of our time. They're not going to be building a data center on every street corner. And as I've told many of the elected officials, if not everyone, you might have heard me say when we opened the one that we did a couple of weeks ago, they have to be right for the communities. And I know there are some folks out there that are concerned about this, and rightfully so. But remember, the property owners who are selling their property to these developments, they have property rights too. And they're the ones that, you know, you can't just tell, have government go in and tell them they can't do it, because they have property rights as well. So it's got to fit the community. But a $15 billion investment like the one that you saw Google announce just a few weeks ago is something that will never happen for that community again. If they say no and they decide they don't want it, and they can if they want to, as you mentioned, other communities around the states have said that, that's an investment that's never coming back. And I would say it's probably a generational game changer for some of the folks in those surrounding counties, who will not only be involved in the construction jobs, which is of thousands of them, but in the operations of the center going forward. So it's not, you're seeing the focus on some of these that are very much in the news. Again, social media is driving a lot of the conversations. I would just encourage folks to stop and try to look at where the facts are. We've seen some very conservative groups physically go to some data centers in other states and film them and interview the surrounding residents about how the data centers have fit into the community. And it has not been as bad as what some of the social media comments you're seeing. So we have to get in front of what the facts look like. We have to agree. I agree with President Trump that AI and data center development will be the space race of our time. And look, foreign countries, Mark, they don't want us to have these data centers. They want to be the ones that control AI. Yeah. So there's a component of this that's definitely driven from some influence from non-friendly countries to the U.S. who don't want us to have these things.
Well, one thing going back to the election, because we are in a position right now with the courts and everything, the new map that was drawn is the one that's going into effect this fall, right? That's rock solid?
That's correct. Missouri First map now has had four challenges with the Supreme Court. All four of those challenges had unanimous 7-0 victories in favor of this is the appropriate map, or the process that is used to develop the map is the appropriate process that we use.
I've saved the most important question for last, Governor Kehoe. Have you or will you go tarps off at a St. Louis Cardinals game eventually here in St. Louis? Everyone's going to answer that question. I'm just telling you right now.
Fred Bird did it.
I mean,
if Fred Bird does it, who can't do it? As you know, I'm a huge Cardinals fan, not because I'm on with you. Let me tell you something funny. I was introduced when we made the big announcement for the Royals facility up in Kansas City. The owner of the Royals introduces me to the press conferences. Here's Governor Kehoe. He's a Cardinals fan.
Oh, that's all right. Well, we're okay with that.
But yes, I am. I'm proud to be one. I think my wife, after 37 years, might leave me if I took my shirt off at a baseball game, much less the voters and my friends in the St. Louis area. So I'm going to let the young people who are really good at that,
Mark, who have
a body that would be okay with their shirt coming off, take care of that.
Did you see Coach Drink over the weekend? Like, he teased it like he was going to tell you, and he's like, nope, I ain't doing it, and I'm not doing it either. So I challenged Senator Schmidt to do it. We'll see if he does it maybe at the congressional baseball game. Governor, great to catch up with you. I really am rooting for you on the income tax plan. I think you're up against it here, so I hope we can change some of the marketing here over the summer and see if people can at least think about this and think through without all the scare tactics.
We're going to work hard, and I appreciate your support. We'll get more information, let people decide for themselves.
Okay, take care, Governor. Thank you. That is Governor Mike Kehoe. By the way, you know who has gone kind of, and I think this happened like last week, but they keep showing it, and my wife pulled it off of social media, and she shared it with me as well. Did you see the Mad Hungarian take off his shirt? Oh. Al Hrabowski?
Didn't he threaten to? Did he actually do it?
He did it, but let me tell you something. Like, how? Let's figure this out here. We can do this in real time. How old is Al, do you think?
I don't know.
Okay, Al. By the way, I love Al. He's fantastic.
Yes.
So he is, no way. Dude is 76 years old.
What? I would not
have
guessed that.
I've never looked good that good with my shirt off at any age that he does. So he had, like, he's big dude, and he's got, I'm jealous. Let me just say that. I have, like, no body strength whatsoever, certainly upper body strength. So I give Al some credit for that.
Heck
because
yeah.
I don't think it was AI. It was all Al. Well, last week, Barry Weiss, who, of course, left the New York Times and started the Free Press, the FP.com, and then was made, you know, Paramount buys Free Press. She's made head of CBS News. A lot of the so-called, you know, journalists with a capital J, they freak out because they don't think that she's qualified to run that esteemed news division. She shuts down the radio news division completely, which is sad. I worked with a lot of those folks over the years, but the model has changed. And, you know, you have to do things, and we're all going to go through things related to technology and changes, yeah, no matter what industry you're in. But, you know, the other thing that Barry did last week is she put the kibosh on some of the folks at CBS, and some of whom were causing trouble, like Sharon Alfonsi was one of the most biased out there. So I guess there was, and this is reporting that's in the New York Times, because they say that there was an exchange last week in which Scott Pelley, who's arrogant and, you know, he thinks he's Mr. 60 Minutes, got very angry at the new, you know, regime. Nick Bilton is the new executive producer because they they have the one guy that resigned, so-called resigned. I think he was shown the door. Nick Bilton is the new guy, and he doesn't necessarily have specific qualifications in broadcast news. And that concerns some of the journalists with a capital J at 60 Minutes. Now, whenever I talk about 60 Minutes, and even lately, I have to distinguish between the political stories they do and some of the feature reporting. Because even in the past few months, I've seen some stories on 60 Minutes that I think are very worthwhile in watching. But it's funny because they never really veer into the politics. They're more some of the featurey type stuff that we did. But I guess the New York Times says at this meeting, Scott Pelley, his newscaster's baritone sometimes shaking in anger, told Nick Bilton, the new executive producer, that he had slender qualifications for his new job, and he questioned the network's commitment to the future of the program, according to a recording of the meeting obtained by the New York Times. So there you go. Someone's recording all this. It was at 10 a.m. last week. The headquarters in Midtown Manhattan. It was supposed to be a formal introduction to Mr. Bilton, who was a tech journalist and a filmmaker who was appointed last week in the aftermath of the shakeup. So CBS and Barry fired Tanya Simon, who was the previous executive producer. Her deputy was fired, along with Sharon Alfonsi and Cecilia Vega, who were two of the show's correspondents. So Mr. Pelley calls that Black Thursday. Oh, my God. So here's the reporting. The meeting quickly turned tense. Not a surprise after months of strain between veteran journalists at 60 Minutes and Ms. Weiss, an opinion journalist who was a longtime critic of legacy media institutions before she became head of one last year. And they go on, and they talk about David Bilton, who's never worked in traditional broadcast news. But he basically tells them the message at the time is, look, you know, journalism is journalism. We're here to do good stories. I'm not going to turn the show into 61-minute episodes, and it's not going to be like TikTok. That's not changing. The show is going to stay exactly how it is right now. And Pelley comes back and says, after Bilton says that the show has to adapt, Barry loves this institution. She loves 60 Minutes. Pelley interrupts and says she's murdering 60 Minutes. She does not love this place. She was brought in to kill it, and she was doing exactly that. Well, maybe it needed to be killed. It certainly needed to be changed. And by the way, if I'm Barry Weiss, the next person I show the door, Scott freaking Pelley.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Nobody gets into maintenance for the paperwork, but somewhere along the way, the clipboards piled up and the spreadsheets multiplied. Good technicians spend hours per day on admin instead of turning a wrench. MaintainX was built to give that time back. Preventative maintenance runs on a real schedule. Automated, assigned, and nothing slipping through. With MaintainX, work orders go out in seconds, and everyone from the floor to the front office knows what's due and when. So your team gets back to the machines, not the paperwork. Over 14,000 companies are already running on MaintainX because the people who keep the world running deserve tools that actually work. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com. That's MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.